Hey guys, I'm Lizzie Raven.
And I'm Judy Swartz.
And welcome
to Why We Left.
Slay. Good morning, everyone. Say it back.
Good morning, Lizzie.
Yeah, okay. This morning we have a guest with us, Hannah. It's good to have you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
How are you feeling today?
I'm excited. I went to really long lengths to be here, so I think it's going to be really good.
It's true. The lengths you went to, she had to get in her car and drive to a different spot with better service. So, y'all better be grateful.
So grateful. So, we're excited to have you on today. Well, at least I am, Jody. How are you feeling?
I'm very excited for it. Okay. Should we just dive right into intensely questioning Hannah? Or should we do, like, preamble first?
No, that sounds good to me. It's just like a... Really
it's like a comment, though.
Yes, tell me all the comments.
Okay, so I just want to say this. Everything I say today is facts. So, like, take away all emotions, everything. Like, it is factual. It is not, like, what people perceive. It is all facts. So, like, facts don't lie. I just wanted to say that because some people like to twist it and be like, oh, that's a lie. No, I'm a very factual person. It's a fact.
Okay, so, I love that. It sounds like she's getting ready to, like, drop some tea on us.
That's kind of what it's feeling like.
Right? Yeah. So, Tina, what is it like living in Pennsylvania?
It's good until the winter comes, and then I can't get to work and stuff because of the snow. And yeah. I like where I live because I live along a highway, but, like, I live in a little town, and I like that. And I like that it's far enough away from Lancaster County that we don't have horse and buggies. So, that's what Pennsylvania's known. So, thankfully, I don't live in, like, horse and buggy land because I really hate driving behind them. I like the mountains.
It's almost kind of scary.
Yeah. And, like, I hate passing people. Like, my husband says I'm a grandma driver because I drive five above. And that's it.
Only five above.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mostly.
I know a lot of people that grew up, like, in Lancaster City, and it just, I don't know. I always wondered what that was like, because from the outside looking in, it doesn't look very fun. There's just so many people.
Yeah. I live in a, like, orchard country, so there isn't a lot of people. It's, like, just rural.
That's awesome. See, I didn't know that. I was picturing you living just smack dab in the middle of Lancaster.
No, that's why I had bad service.
We're talking like churning butter and like out in the field every day. You know what I mean?
I churn butter. But I don't work in the field. It's so good when you're anxious or like mad because you get like a quart container and you fill it with like good milk and then you just stand there and you shake that thing. Like a quart jar, you just shake it and shake it and shake it. And it calms you down.
That's
like I'm
fun.
Serious.
Also, how badass of you to make your own butter.
Yeah.
I don't always. I just did that once. And I was really, really mad. So it did go well.
Yeah. But you're going to try it again. And it's going to go good. Okay, cool.
Yes. So
I want to know more about you and your husband and how you guys met. Because I think you guys are just so cute together. So
thank you.
His name is Sheldon.
Yeah. Yeah, so I actually, due to, like, some severe abuse in my family, I went to a girl's home for mental help. Went there, like, suicidal. Came out amazing. God helped me so much. And while I was there, I met a girl. And she had this guy she kept, like, talking about a lot. And because they were friends. And so when we came out of the girl's home, she was like, we're going to have a weekend party. And it happened that, like, a bunch of other people dropped out and it was just three guys and us three girls. And we were just like hung out and I was like talking about the guys to my friend by texting her while like sitting beside her. And he was like, you're really annoying me by doing that. So he took my phone. He took her phone too. Yeah. And I was so annoyed. And so I was just like, no. So I immediately, he was just like a big no to me. And I ended up... I was just like, my goodness, he was like 21 and I was 18, so like too much of an age difference too,
right?
But then through the years he became like one of my good guy friends, and then I started dating another guy, and this other guy was like threatened by Sheldon, so he made me block him. We were in the same building together. I said hi to him and my ex like glared at him like glared daggers, and I was just like,
oh my goodness.
Oh my word. And he was, like, rude to Sheldon. I was like, Sheldon's a really solid guy. Then we broke up. And, like, 2 months later, I was like, I'm going to apologize. Because I was, like, apologizing to a bunch of different people. So I got Sheldon's number back. And I texted him. I was like, I'm sorry for the way my ex treated you. It was not okay. Like, he made me block you. Yeah, it was, like, I had to apologize to a lot of people. And so, like, to me, it was just, like, I just want to make things better. And then we, like, texted a good bit. And then the friend that we had met through lived in Texas. And we're like, he said, I'm going to go visit her. You want to come along? And I was like, yeah, sure. At that point, we had already gone out, just the two of us, for, like, a little greet and coffee. He wanted to see how I was doing. It was, how do you say it? Like, nothing involved.
Platonic.
For me, yeah, platonic. That's when things got involved for me. But I was like, it's not going to happen. And then he was like, you want to go to Texas with me? And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, how much are the tickets? And he's like, I'm paying. And he's like volunteering at camp. So like, he don't got money.
Right.
And I was just like, Mom, what does this mean? And I started asking like all my guy friends. I was at a Bible school at the time. And they were like, it's not platonic. Like, he means something. So by the end of that trip, there was definitely something there. He picked me up. And then he dropped me off from the airport because he was headed back out to Ohio. And I'm sitting in the car. And I'm like, I have my hands full of stuff. And I'm getting ready to leave. And I'm like, I like this guy. I really like him. But if he doesn't talk to me about the fact of what's going on between us, like, I'm blocking him. Because my ex happened. I'm not messing around. And I have my hands full. And he's like, so, Hannah, I have a question. And I was just like, yes. He's like, do you feel like I've been leading you on? And I wanted to say no. Because I was like, I want to keep this relationship. And I was like, yes. Yes, you have been. And so that's kind of how it started. And we didn't start dating right away. We started unofficially dating. And just, we started writing letters and, like, calling for, like, 7 hours.
You wrote letters?
Stop.
What
is happening?
It's adorable. I still have the stack. He has the stack. So then we started dating. And it was just.
That's amazing.
It was so, I don't know, I love our story.
Yeah, that is so cute. Oh my goodness.
Yep.
And then how long were you guys dating before you got married?
Unofficially dating, we were like together for like 10 months. And then we started officially dating in November, got engaged in February, and married in August. So it was under a year from dating to married because we were like, we already know each other. We're not messing around. But we were
great.
It was May or August, and I like to have my things planned out. So we didn't want to wait till August, but we kind of had to because we didn't have any in between months.
Yeah, so. I understand. Yeah, I used to be very suspicious of people that like started dating and then got married a few months later. And then I started dating. And when you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no point in waiting around.
Yeah.
You know, you want to marry somebody, just, you know?
Just marry. We almost eloped. Because it was just, like, a long thing and planning a wedding is stressful. But then we're like, no, we already paid.
Imagine.
Like, we're just going to go through with this.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, me and my husband, we didn't have a wedding because, I mean, I've never really wanted one. And I'm very glad that we did things the way we did. We saved ourselves a lot of money and stress.
Yeah. The stressful thing was I didn't invite my dad's side of the family except for, like, three people.
Right.
Three people. Like, that we're a little closer. I regret inviting some of them. But, yeah, there was a big old problem with that because they started messaging me. And I was just like, nope. Send it to my Sheldon. And I said, veto this. Tell me what to respond. He'd be like, don't respond. So I wouldn't. So now they're like.
You had him.
Yeah. Because I couldn't mentally listen to the messages. And I needed to know what to do about it. Like, are they planning to come to the wedding? Or is that them saying no?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I always feel so bad when people are planning weddings and their families just make a bunch of drama. Like, it's just uncalled for. You don't need to do that.
Well, they thought I should have invited my dad. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That sounds tough.
Well, I never have to worry about.
You want a wedding?
You never
have. What? I never have to worry about my family.
No way in hell they're coming.
That's true. So that's kind of like relieving.
Yeah. That does take a lot of the stress off when the people that. We wanted people at our wedding that meant something to us. Well, like, meant a lot to us. And weren't coming for their own reasons. And so our wedding, the wedding day was so peaceful. It was a party. And it was just so calm. And that's how I wanted it, like stress-free. And it was.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm glad you
got that. I'm glad after all that stress, you ended up having a really beautiful day.
It was. And then we went to Tennessee, which is like beautiful.
Yes. Oh, tell me about it. It's the best state ever.
Tennessee, were you at?
Smithville.
Really? That's where my husband works. Smithville.
Oh.
Yeah. It was really nice.
It's amazing.
Well, I mean, feel free to come again and just like see us.
I remember texting some people and being like, hi, I'm going to be in your state, but we're not going to come see you this week. But if we come back.
That's funny. I love that. So when did you know that your husband was the one? Was there a moment or was it just like kind of a slow realization?
Yes. So I deal with like a lot of like trauma related to my ex, not even from my family, but to my ex in how he treated me. And I thought for sure, like, we didn't have physical touch for like 3 months of our relationship just because I wasn't ready and we were just like, didn't. And I'm so thankful we didn't, because my ex was so physical that like I was scared of touching my boyfriend. If he would have wanted to touch me, I wasn't sure I was gonna be able to accept it. And I think it was Thanksgiving or Christmas, it was soon after we started dating, and he was at camp, so we didn't get to see each other in person a lot. But it was like one of the times we did get to see each other in person. And I knew I wanted to marry him, but it wasn't like a, you know, like the deep feel of like, this is gonna be forever. And I was just like, not okay. I was crying and just like a literal mess. Everyone went to bed and we're like sitting out on the couch. And I was just like, break up with me. The trauma and the emotional baggage that I'm bringing to this relationship is not worth your time. Like, just don't. And I just remember just like being like physically unwell. I started like shaking and stuff. And he just like cradled me in his arms. And he was like, I'm not going to break up with you. Like, he knew I had already lost a baby before getting into the relationship with him from the rape. He knew all of this before he even asked me out. He knew it all. He was like cradling me in his arms and he was just like, I'm not going to leave you. Remember, I chose you. And he goes, and I'm not going to break up with you because I care about you. And he didn't say I love you. And I was just like, missed opportunity here. Like, honey, I handed it to you. And he was just like, I'm never going to leave you. So, like, I chose you, even with your baggage. So why would I break up? And then it's like 12 o'clock at night. And I was like, okay, I got to go home. And he's saying goodbye to me and he's hugging me. And he's like, and you know, another reason I wouldn't break up with you is because, like, I love you. And I was just like, I just started bawling. I was just like, oh my word. Like, I didn't know how to accept it. But I was like, in that moment, I was like, this man's like, he's like 6'2". He's standing taller than me. Like, I felt so protected in his hug. And I was just like, he will never leave me. He's going to stand by me no matter what. And I was like, okay, let's get married.
That is so funny. Yeah. I love that story. Like, it's like sad in some ways, but just so beautiful in other ways.
Yeah. And it just like Thanksgiving was a really, really hard time with my ex. And then it got redeemed with Sheldon saying, I love you, that day that was so hard with my ex. So there's just like so many hard things. Like, the week my ex broke up with me was the week Sheldon proposed to me, and he never knew it. So like, it's not fate, it's God.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No such thing as coincidence. I love that story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I love it too. It's close to my heart.
Yeah, I can see why.
He sounds like such a sweetheart.
He is. I don't know how I got him. He's so solid too.
That's how I feel. Yeah. That's how I feel about William. Just every now and then, I just look at him and I'm like, where did you come from? Like, how am I this lucky?
Exactly. I'm just like a ball of emotions. And he's just like, I got you. And I'm like, how?
Yeah, I love that.
Every other man in my life is like trash. And that I got you.
Right?
Except for my brothers. Beautiful. They're good.
You got sweet. Yeah. A good brother is nice. So.
I don't know.
Yeah, don't worry.
Judy, you have your brothers are all
really amazing, right? My brothers are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know James very well, but John and Phil, they're some of my best friends.
Yeah. Well,
they're like your adopted brothers.
They really are.
Yeah.
That, you need that, especially if you don't have them. If your brothers aren't who they need to be, like, to have those solid adopted guy brothers that you can just, like, with is just so healing too.
It really is.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? I believe it.
Absolutely.
Tell us more about your family. How many siblings do you have? Are you guys really close?
I have 3 brothers and 2 sisters. So there's 6 of us all together, and it's a boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. The trauma bond is really real in our family, especially when we were younger. We lived for each other. I was my dad's pet, so that created a little bit of issues when we were young.
Yeah.
But now, like, about 3 or 4 of us kids are, like, tight. If they're one of us is going to mom's house, the other of us comes, you know? We're really tight. And then the 2 of the other siblings live, like, more of a distance away. So we're tight, but, like, in a different way. And
yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, my oldest sister is on a journey. So that adds a little bit of tension to the family. But, yeah, we're good, me and her. So that's fun.
Yeah, love that. And, like, you know, in a good relationship, you don't always agree on everything. But
yeah,
that doesn't mean still really close, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, my little sister lived with us for a time after we got married, like a month and a half after we got married.
Because
my mom went and got back surgery, so she was like, what better place to live than at my sister's house?
That's so sweet of you to just open up your home to your little sister.
I loved it. Actually, I miss her living at our house because, like, she'd make me breakfast. Yeah. I don't eat as much food when she's not there.
That is adorable.
How old is she?
She is 15, but looks 20. So, very mature.
She sounds. I used to live with my older sister. She would make me breakfast. And I miss that. Ruby. If you're there, come make me breakfast soon.
Come deliver her breakfast someday.
Yes. Like, I need it. So, yeah, I know you've mentioned your dad a little bit, but can you tell us more about, like, him and what your relationship with him was like?
My relationship with him till I was like 10, I was like, I did everything with him. Like, we would have like date nights every other week, and it was like solid. He was in such good standing with the church, and everyone just thought he was like the best guy ever. And I just remember my older siblings being like saying stuff, and I was in my little head, actually, it was probably till I was like 9. Like, I was always like, no. And, like, he would pull me on his lap at 9. And I was just like, oh, like, this is a normal thing for a dad to do. And he'd give me a kiss on the cheek. And I was just like, oh, this is, like, so normal, you know? And I was like, I don't know why my mom and dad, like, fight all the time. But it was pretty much, like, when I turned 9, I was just like, oh, my word, my dad is, like, the worst. I could watch abuse happen in front of me, but because I wasn't abused by him in the same way, like, it didn't feel the same. I was his pet. Like, at 3 or 4 years old, I do remember, like, him getting, like, mad. And as, like, a little girl, I remember I had to use a stool, going over and getting a hairbrush and just coming and brushing his hair to, like, keep him calm at, like, 3 or 4. And to me, that didn't seem like a bad thing until I was, like, 9, and I was the one, like, manipulating him to stay calm. And, like, I watched him, like, throw my brother through a glass door. And there was, like, a time where, like, my mom came down with bruises on her neck. And I just remember, like, the anger that just started bottling up in me against him. And, like, at 6 or 7, I think, is when she came down with bruises on her neck. My grandpa passed, and my little sister was born the next week. And I just remember just being like, why is this my life? And yet, like, I still thought of him as a good man. Yeah. It was confusing because he manipulated me and controlled me so much that, like, I thought he was good because he had me, like, so intricately, like, if you've been through control manipulations, you would understand it, especially as, like, a kid.
Oh yeah.
So then when I got older, exactly. And then when I got older, I was like, this man is not good. But I couldn't do anything. So I thought, like, hey, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to talk to someone there at church. Well, they would go back to him. My older siblings would talk about it. They would go back. The church would go back to him and be like, is this true? And he'd say no. And then he'd come home and beat my older sibling. So then once I hit, like, 11, I was, like, done with him and just kind of living in the house that he lived in because I had nowhere else to go until when I was 14, the church finally was like, oh, there might be something here, and split the family up. And I hated him. And then I decided, I decided when I was 16, though, that, like, I'm good at manipulating him. Like, I can get what I want. And I wanted so badly to get out of the church I was in. And so I was like, I'm going to go live with him. And I'm going to be able to do what I want and tell him whatever I want, because, like, I'm his pet. So he'll give me whatever I want. And I'll just be able to have my own way. And people were like, no, they knew I was going to get hurt way more than I already was. Right. And so thankfully they kept me from, like, going back into that relationship. And for a time while I lived with my one aunt and uncle, I was kind of forced to go with him on Sunday and go to church with him. And yet I wasn't allowed to see my mom. It was so dumb. I would go to church with him some.
Like, was it the church that wouldn't let you see your mom?
Well, I was living with his sister, so.
Yeah.
It's like, it would take me like 4 hours to tell you the whole story. So, like, in short, I lived with his sister, and there was a committee that took care of me. And they were the ones that, like, kept me from my mom, because they listened to my dad and said he was a good man. So, yeah. Then when I went to Meadows of Hope, which was the girls' home I went to, like, I cut all ties with him, which I had cut ties with him before, but I couldn't really because it was his sister.
Right. That is an insane story.
Yeah. So now, like, he is, like, completely cut off. He tries to reconnect with me, and I'm like, you're just doing that because you want to tell your family that you're trying, because our wedding made, like, a big old blowout. So then you're just trying to tell your family that what you're doing is right. So, yeah, my relationship with him is, like, non-existent. Yeah.
That's good.
You don't need toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm really proud of you for that, because I know how hard that is, you know?
Yeah.
It's not, like, it's an easy thing to do. But keeping yourself safe is important, and you can't enable abuse by...
Exactly. And, like, if I would let him in my life, he would start controlling it again. Because... He would speak so bad of the church I go to now. Like, he would just badmouth, not that church, but, like, the bigger body of that church, like, the name of the church, like, BMA. He could not say worse things about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, now, like, if he knew, he would just have, like, a literal fit. Even though he's an abuser, he still is like, I'm a good man. I attend charity. Like, I'm good. And it's like, no. And they believe him. But it's, it's not. So go for it.
Does he do any kind of, like, therapy or anything?
No, because he's not in the problem. He's not the problem. My mom is.
Yeah.
He's narcissistic.
Problem. Yeah.
So, literally, they've gone for so much counseling over so many years, and every counselor has taken, except for, like, one place, has taken my dad's side and said, one counselor actually told my mom, have you forgiven him? And she said, yes. And then he goes, so you should move in with him, because that means, like, all trust is built back. And she was like, not in her words, but heck no. Is like, she was just like,
good for her. That's an insane thing to say to someone.
Yeah, she was like, forgiveness does not mean trust. I am not moving back in with him.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that that person who told her that never went to school.
Yeah, I was going to say, are any of these counselors, like, have they been actually trained? Or are they just, like, these church counselors that...
Some of them have been through training, but they're conservative people. And like, I personally will never go back to a Mennonite counselor. They might be good, but I want a counselor with degrees that understands the psychological things and is solid in what they know, because your brain responds to trauma, and it's not all read your Bible and pray.
Yeah, exactly. Like God gave us other resources to use, like a therapist who has actually had for real training, who has gone to school for years. They didn't, like, take some course online, and now they're a counselor, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, people may have different views, but I believe that, yes, God helps you with healing, but also you have to understand the way your brain works and the way your body responds. Otherwise, you're not going to come to complete healing.
Yeah, you can't be just shoving everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I can definitely relate to, like, the part of your story where you were talking about how you used to think your dad was this really amazing person, and then just, I don't know, you just kind of realize, like, he's not actually...
I can also relate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my dad definitely wasn't anywhere nearly as abusive as yours. But, you know, he was still very emotionally abusive. And, yeah, I thought he was this great man. Because, you know, like you said, like, so manipulative and, like, narcissistic. that they can just manipulate you into thinking whatever they want, you know? It's crazy.
And you grow up thinking they're great.
Yeah. Once I moved out and kind of got out from under that manipulation is when I really started seeing his actions in a more, I want to say objective light, you know? But it's, yeah, it's that moment when you realize that your dad is, like, actually not a good person. That's, it's really heartbreaking. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah.
No one deserves it.
Yeah, I don't know. I never know how to respond when someone says I'm sorry, because I am sorry. I went through it, and it was my life. I don't say this lightly, but my life was a living hell because of the amount of abuse I went through. But I also think that God is going to, is he already is using what Satan tried to use against me for good. The care I have for people now is, like, I never would have understood other people that were abused. But yeah. I'm, like, I do feel, like, that I've been through, like, a lot of trauma, and it's horrible. But I'm also, like, God is, like, redeeming it in so many big ways that now I'm, like, yes, thank you for feeling sorry. I'm glad. Like, thank you for affirming that. But I'm also, like, it was my life, and now I can only use it for good.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that you're willing to do that, you know? Not everybody comes through something like that stronger, you know? You have to really be willing to let God work in you. And so just, like, good for you for being willing to let God do that work in you.
Applaud you.
Thank you.
And being willing to share your story to help other people. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But, yes, genuinely, you're very strong. And I'm very proud of you.
Right? Y'all.
Same. Like,
whenever I'm having a hard day, I'm just gonna be like, hey, Lizzie, give me affirmations for my day.
I'd love to, actually. Set me up at any given time, you know?
See, you're using your story to help people. So you're just as strong.
That's why we know how hard it is.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
Like, it's not like we got here overnight. It's not like this is just how we are.
Yeah.
We put a lot of work into this, and God had to put a lot of work into us, you know? So
exactly.
You know how hard it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first episode we ever recorded was, like, really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, like...
Yeah. And it still is.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, we know this is what God wants us to do. And so you just got to keep pushing forward, you know? Do you think that having that kind of relationship with your dad that was really difficult, do you think that impacted your relationship with God at all?
For sure. Because...
Okay.
Like... The way you view God can come from how your dad treats you. But also, I think that, like, your parents kind of show you the love of God. Like, how your parents relate.
Yeah.
Him, like, literally physically hurting her, like, every day. To me, like, watching that happen, then I thought no one could love me. So it wasn't so much of, like, my relationship with my dad, it was more of, like, the way I perceived love, so then no one could love me.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, then when I started having a relationship with Sheldon, and I was telling him things that, you know, the rape that happened, the losing a baby, like, I'm such a dirty person, because this happened to me, like, when he started loving me no matter what, even days when I was just, like, break up with me, I started realizing, like, I remember just crying and being like, this is what the love of God feels like. I can actually, like,
beautiful.
This is how God's love feels. So, like, in a sense, yes, the way my dad treated me and his abuse did, like, change how I looked at God. But it was more of the fact that I just didn't know what true love felt like. More than, if you understand what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, I absolutely understand. Yeah, I went through the same thing where it's like, if my own parents can't love me, like, who's going to?
Yeah, and then it's like, well, then I don't even know how God's love feels. Yeah, he died for me. It didn't have an impact on me until I realized, like, Sheldon loves me even after the rape, even after this. I asked him, I was like, how would people have around you felt if you would have married me or started dating me with a one-year-old? And he was like, it wouldn't matter. And I was just like, oh, my word, this is, you know, God's like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to take you no matter what because I love you.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. I'm so glad that you have Sheldon and that you're able to, like, God was able to use him to show you what love actually looks like.
It really, it That's changed amazing. Me.
Yes, yes. Unconditional love will change who you are mm-hmm. for the best, for the better.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's really sad that you didn't get to experience that father's love, or at least not from your dad. It leaves a hole, you know?
It does. And I have a guy in my life that is more of like a dad to me, but it's still not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, bro, not me. Anybody over 40, I will be avoiding them.
Yeah, and it's so hard then to even trust men. How can I trust the pastor? If he wants to have a meeting with me, I'm immediately like, why? What did I do? And that's right. Partly because the pastor only ever talked to me because I did something wrong. Because yeah. of, like, my dad literally made me fear people that are older because he was just...
Right.
You know, especially if they're his friends, I'm like, I will not talk with you. Unless it's to tell you that he's not a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta do what you gotta do. But yeah, I think, you know, the Bible talks about God's love being a father's love. And that's, you know, obviously something that I have not experienced is like a father's love. And so then to me, it's like thinking about God as my father. It's like, I don't even know what that's supposed to look like. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's something that I've worked through.
Well, people have used that analogy. Of, like, you know, God's love is like yeah. the Father's love. And I always was like, no, because I can't look at it that way. So I kind of did protect myself from right. looking at it that way because I was like, it's going to ruin my relationship. So while I did look at it that way, it was also like, no. Cause
yeah.
I want a good relationship with God.
Yeah. Look at the self-awareness. That's awesome.
It didn't just come overnight.
Oh, yeah. I believe it. So how do you think God views you now? Like, when you think of God looking down on you, what do you think he feels towards you?
I'd say he would have to cry a lot. Because
really,
nothing that happened to me was what he wanted.
Right.
Whenever, like, I look back at some of my pain, I'm like, you know what? I was like, where is God in this moment? And I'm like, no, God was right there. He was holding me while crying. Right. So I feel like that's kind of how I look at him. Looking at me is like yeah. that he really is just like, my daughter is now close to me again. Because for a time, I couldn't be close to him. I couldn't feel him. And now right. that I can, it's like, I kind of think of like him holding like a little lamb with like a broken leg and like mud all over their fur. But like, it's still like the most precious gift to him ever.
That's beautiful.
Stop, I'm gonna cry.
That's amazing. Has that changed over the years? Like,
well, I often used to think when I was younger that God didn't care because I would pray as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, God, my dad is literally, like, I can hear his fist making contact with a body upstairs, you know, with my mom. Just come mm-hmm. and send someone, you know, just send someone to save my mom. Or save my older brother. Right. And he would, like, and no one would come. And so I often right. thought about it. It's like, God doesn't care and God isn't there because he didn't send anyone. And so when I was younger, right. that's how I felt. But now that I'm older, I look back and I'm like, God did send interventions. It just wasn't how I wanted it.
Yeah.
Like.
Yes.
It was, he was there for me, but I couldn't feel him. But he did send interventions. Yeah. I just didn't realize it because my brain was too young. And I didn't know God like I do now.
I was just going to say, you have like such a crazy story. And I'm so glad that I'm here for it, you know?
Yeah.
I love that you're willing to talk about it.
If my story can help other people come to find healing, then my work on earth is done. I don't know what God has me here for, but
yeah.
he kept me here after 3 attempts to end my life. So I'm here for a reason. And
absolutely.
Who knows what the reason he didn't find. The reason he has in mind, but it's
right. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe you need to start your own podcast, girl, you know?
Yeah. I know. I've thought about it for like 2 years now.
Yeah. Well, and also when it's time to do something, you just know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like with this podcast, I woke up one morning and God was just like, okay, it's time to start it, you know?
And look at all the good you're doing.
Aw, thank you. It's a little hard to see some days.
Oh, no, girl, I listen to it on my way to work, my way home, and I'm just like, oh, my word. Yes, amen. Sometimes I cry.
That's so sweet. Oh, my goodness.
I love to hear it.
Right?
Well, I don't love to hear that you cry, but I love to hear that you enjoy this.
It's good to cry. I wasn't able to cry until I was like 17. So now that I can cry, it's like amazing.
Yeah. Now you're just doing it all the time. You're like, yes, this is.
Amen.
We're just letting it go.
Over the last, for a long time, I could not cry about anything. And then over the last 2 months, I just turned into a baby. Like, I cry at any little, like, the smallest inconvenience. And you'll see me in a corner crying. It's really, but I love it.
It's healing. Nice.
Yeah.
Like, it's so healing. And my one coworker, I was like, I just feel like crying because hormones. And she was just like, then cry. I'm like, I'm literally helping people at a register. I can't just cry. But she's just like, it's so healing. You need to do it. And I was like, yeah, it is.
Just letting it out is that there's something so cathartic about.
Yeah.
Is that a word that I can use?
Yes. Yeah. And you should look into the physical things that are going on in your body when you're crying, because it's actually doing stuff. Like, it's helping your cortisol balance itself. And I don't even remember what all, but
that's why I'm like, wow.
It's like,
that's why I feel bad for men, because they don't cry a lot. And it's like,
maybe they just
cry. Maybe like it's all just like.
Men can cry, but they're told that they have to be strong. So they literally from little and up are forced not to cry. So they like shut it all off. They need to heal so that they can cry.
Poor dudes.
I know.
Yeah. It's true. I don't know how many guys I've talked to that have said something down those lines. Like, girls have told them that before. They're like, stop crying. You're such a little bitch.
Oh.
Which is just horrifying to me. Like,
it's the gender, not equality, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
This is the thing. If my man was felt vulnerable enough for me to cry, that would be the most.
It would be such an honor.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, trust me that much.
Yeah.
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 Oh, I love that.
I would not love to see him cry because I don't want him to hurt, but.
Right. Yeah. But pain happens, you know, mm-hmm. sadly. So when did you first start a relationship with God? Like, and how has that kind of changed over the years?
Oh, that's a long one. When I was 10 or 11, there was a family in the church that were actually what I would say solid Christians. And they were there for my family like no other. The one brother, his name was Hank, and he would come up every Sunday and pull my pigtail. And I would get so annoyed at him. But I realized I started looking forward to it because it was something I could trust him and I could actually go and talk with him. And him and his family, they would ask me every Sunday, are you okay? One of them would. They would always check in, make sure I'm okay. Yeah. And his sister, her name was Molly, bless her heart. She was the sweetest thing. She still is. I just don't know her as well anymore. And we started doing Bible studies together. And I would have said I was born again then, but I say it in quotations because everyone else my age was. So it's kind of a church thing. So I would have said that I felt free for a week, but I was still living at home. I still had some insane, crazy emotional baggage. And it just, it wasn't,
absolutely.
It wasn't a relationship like I have now. And I just felt like I couldn't do anything right for the church. For one thing, they were calling me rebels. I wasn't a good person. So for me, that made a huge difference when you're constantly being condemned. So then when I was 16, I was living in Virginia and I was fighting some demons inside of myself. I tried to end my life and I was just extremely depressed and so sad. And I was living with this one family. And it was over a summer Bible school. So there was teachers came from out of state to help for the week because they need more teachers. And there was this one guy, his name was Wendell. And he was staying the night at the place I was living at. And he was just what is your issue? He was so blunt. He was what is your issue? You're fighting so hard against God and freedom just so that you can do what you want. He's you don't realize that all these people care so much about you and you're literally pushing everyone out. And I just remember being I hate you. I didn't say it, but I was just so mad at him. And so I went upstairs and I just crumpled on my bed because I was the battle between me and God and self was so, so hard. And I was just I can't. I don't want anything to do with God, you know, I just can't. And I call her my sister now. But at that time, I kind of hated her too because she kept me in line. I mean, I'm 16, so kind of hated everyone. And she was just why don't you want happiness? And I was I do. And Satan really had a hold on me. Because she was like, then you need to get up and go downstairs and talk through it with people. And I was like, but I literally physically cannot stand up. And she's like, okay, I will help you. I just remember her half picking me up and like helping me walk downstairs because like I could barely use my legs.
That's amazing. And, yeah.
And I was just like, went down and I talked through it and I never felt so free. Like I went outside and I was like, birds were singing. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Wendell like jumped on the piano and started playing the piano. And they were like, dude, there's like five other people sleeping in the house. And he was like, I don't care. I'm so happy. Like, you know, she found God. And like, I started experiencing him in like an insane way. Like, I was like, God is so good. But then I got involved with a guy and he was not good for me. And we started like going downhill and I started letting myself get depressed again. And I just like kind of put God on the back burner. And I was like, it was kind of like a battle between my depression and letting myself wallow in it versus giving it to God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I decided that I didn't want God anymore and that God wasn't real because some stuff was happening in my family and my mom moved back in with my dad because the church told her to. And I was like, God isn't real because he wouldn't allow that. And so I started being like, I'm an atheist. I started praying to Satan and like, I could feel Satan take over my body. Like one time I was like, I'm going to work out like no other. And I like did like 100 push-ups and I can't do push-ups. And like the other two girls that were in the house at the time were like, we could feel the presence. And they were like in a different room, like praying Satan away.
And that is insane.
It was crazy. And then a couple weeks later, like I just was not okay. And I was just laying on the couch and she was like, the one girl was like, you need to get up and go to bed. Like, it's like 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, I can't. There's a demon on me, like laying on my body. I can't move. And she was like, you can move. And I was like, I literally cannot move. And I just remember being like, I have no power right now. It was like the worst feeling. And so people came over and they literally picked me up and like pushed me off the couch and started praying for me. And it was like they prayed off the bonds that Satan had on me. And, like, I could literally feel the spirits just lifting because I didn't have enough power on my own
to
be delivered. But they delivered me from Satan because I was praying to him. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling so light. And I was like, I'm going to restart my connection with God. And I did.
Yeah.
And I started getting better. But I didn't come to, like, complete freedom because I still wasn't ready to, like, fully trust God because why would he let what happened to me happen?
Yeah, so absolutely.
I moved in and so I moved in with my aunt because I got myself kicked out of that home kind of and I moved in with my dad's sister and it was horrible. She basically told me that my dad going to a strip club wasn't cheating.
Okay, and
depression, like I would say I had a relationship with God, but depression had like an extreme hold on me. I started self-harming. I attempted to end my life again. It was just really, really dark. I started sneaking out, started smoking, and just, I couldn't. Like, I was just like, I can't right now. And they told me, they gave me an ultimatum. They said, I need to go to a girl's home or I'm going to be put on the street.
So
I was like, I'm not going to this girl's home. Like, I'm fine. And the guy I was with at the time and my sister was just like, you need help. Like, you're sending us self-harm pictures every night. And like, they were bad. Like, I have some insane scars because, like, they bled so badly. And they're like, we're scared for your life.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, fine. And I took my thick stack of papers. I read them all. I signed them all. And I said, I don't want anything to do with my mom. I mean, sheesh, not my mom. No, love my mom. Oh, my goodness. My dad, I don't want anything to do with his sister. When I go to this home, I want to be cut off from them. But because of legal reasons that my dad has signed me over to them, I wasn't 18, so I was still, I legally had to do home visits with them, but then halfway through I was able to go back with my mom. And my relationship with God, like, there was no big moment that I'm just like, oh my word, God and I are best friends now, but it was the gradual the healing of my emotional state where I started seeing God in like such a real way and being like, he held me here, he cried with me here, he sent angels to protect me here. When I took that whole bottle of Advil, he literally just pulled it out of my stomach because I should be dead.
Yeah.
He saved me in so many different ways. And it just started, that's where my relationship with God really grew deep and I was able to be like, you know, this is where it's at versus before. Yeah. And that's when it was life changing, where I was just like, oh my word, God is so good, y'all. Y'all that live in this mediocre little Mennonite life, you don't realize what God can actually do for you.
Right. Yeah.
Not all Mennonites are mediocre, but some of them really are, but I do know a few Mennonite churches that really are pursuing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah, and there's people in it. But, like, the Mennonite system as a whole is not God.
Yes. It's Yeah, it's all about legal. It's legalistic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the legalism. That's what absolutely. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, it's insane to me hearing your story and just that amount of darkness, like, and God was able to just like bring you out of that, and I know you you fought to get out too, but like God was there helping. That's that is a lot of darkness to get out of.
And now look at you, which is incredible.
It's scary to say because a lot of people do not know that about me, like people don't know that about me, but I'm like, you know what? My story has so much power. And when I worked at camp, like I worked at a summer camp, and this girl was just like, you don't know about spirits. And I was like, oh, woman, I do. Like, I know deeply. And it's like, when you know the spiritual warfare that is actually happening around you, because I felt it, I know it. It's insane. And like, coming from that, I'm like, you got to realize to pray protection over your family, because if you don't, like, it's not there. So...
Absolutely. And over your like house and stuff. I'd be praying protection over my house.
You don't know what happened before. You don't know what happened in that house before. And spirits stay. I'm sorry. I'm not gonna hold back. Like, read your Bible, research into the spiritual warfare. It is real and spirits are real.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. I'm just kind of blown away, you know? Like, that's an insane story. So proud of you.
No, do not apologize.
Oh, yeah, never.
No.
Never. Don't apologize for anything.
Never.
Okay. Just make sure to tie your feet to the ground next time so you don't get blown away so far.
Again, with the dad jokes. You're so good. You're too good at those. Yeah.
It was a beautiful story. Thank you. The dad jokes used to be coping.
Yeah. Coping with humor. I've never done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that there are different ways to cope with humor. Humor. Mine is just like dark, dark.
Dark humor.
Yeah, dark.
Yes, same.
And it scares people
sometimes. It is what it is. It should be, okay, it's kind of nice when I scare people because it's like, you know what? I'm glad you don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad you don't know what this darkness is like.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know. But I love that. Like, you experienced so much darkness, but now you're experiencing to the same degree, like, that much light. I feel like the more darkness you experience, to the greater degree, you can then, like, experience the light. Because you know what the darkness is like. And so you know. I don't know exactly how to get my point across.
I thought it was said very beautifully.
Thank you. You guys know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Everyone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also like, I think that the more love you don't experience, to the greater degree you can love later, because you know what love is not, you know?
Yes. Yes. You know what love is not, so then you can know what love is.
Exactly. Like, you have a greater understanding of love because you understand so well what it's not. Yeah. Cool. Let's see. I was gonna ask, like, do you think this negative relationship with your dad and, like, all this condemnation and stuff that you felt, did it impact the way you viewed yourself? But, like, obviously it did because of all the self-harm. Like, you did not feel good about yourself.
Basically, the simple way to answer that is just because I didn't know what love is, I didn't know how to love myself. And because... Yes. In the church, it was taught so much that you wear baggy clothes, you cannot make yourself pretty. It was just like, there was no, like, I couldn't at least feel like I was cute. I wasn't allowed to even dress cute. So, like, it was just so absent. There was, self-love was such a bad thing that I didn't know how. I had to learn.
It's like I heard some actual sermons about how self-love is terrible. That's not a, like, it's of the world, like, sermons.
Like, actual designated, like,
So I'm really glad that you don't feel that way anymore, and that you, I don't know, that you were able to move away from that and see that kind of teaching is not from God.
Exactly. It's where they take the Bible and then they pull it out of restraint or twist it like it's silly putty.
Yeah, right?
They make it to fit whatever they want.
Exactly. Like, they take the one verse in the Bible that talks about modesty. It's one little verse in Timothy. And then they build an entire theology around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. It's insane.
Yeah.
But I know something that you're very passionate about is, like, the amount of sexual abuse that happens in these Anabaptist circles. And so I'd love to hear more of, like, your thoughts around it. And, like, why is it something that you're so passionate about?
So I can't even count on my hand how many of my friends have been abused. Like, it is past 10. It is, there's so many. And so many of them are from conservative circles. Some of them aren't, but a lot of them come from these conservative circles, and a lot of them have been hurt or abused by like literal leaders. And I'm like, leaders should not be abusing people.
Right.
Anyways, the reason it's become such a passion is I've just watched it, and it's happened to me. So I didn't have a dad because my dad was abusive. And he was enabled by the church that basically, I remember going to a wedding and they had a sermon where they talked about the wife being a doormat.
Excuse me? Like, that's the goal?
Yeah, she serves him.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, a wife is not a doormat. But I remember that being taught. And it's like, my dad was so enabled to abuse that it created the home I lived in. It just cultivated. It cultivated such abuse that, like, my dad was handed it on a silver platter for him to do whatever he wanted. Then I went to the girls' home and I left, and I was doing so well. And I was just like, I'm not going to date. I'm not going to whatever. And then a guy came into my life, and because I hadn't been shown love, he like took over my life. Yes. I didn't recognize like the abuse that was happening to me. So when he just started manipulating and controlling me, like, I let it happen. And then when he told me, you have to take off your clothes for me, I had no power because I didn't know that I had, like, I didn't realize that I have the power to say no. And I said no, but he didn't listen. And so I was like, okay, then I will just do what you say, because you're gonna literally, like, physically hurt me if I don't. I was that scared. And like, he was like 200 plus pounds, trying to be respectful here.
Wow.
And it got to the point where like the abuse was happening so much, and then someone actually found out. That actually became so freeing to me, because I was able to let it go and to heal, but I didn't realize it was abuse till I was out of it. And then I was like, Mom, that was rape. I didn't want it. I said no. It was rape. And I realized that I lost a baby because I got pregnant and ended up losing it because he physically, sexually assaulted me so bad that I just started gushing blood for like an hour. And I was like, I lost a baby because of him. Yeah, I wouldn't have had a baby if it wouldn't have been for him, but I lost a baby because of him. And it literally ripped my heart apart. And I was like, I do not want. Yeah. It just like, it created that same feeling, like you saying, I'm so sorry, to hearing it. Like, I now have that understanding for other girls, for more than just physical, mental, emotional, and church abuse. I realized there was so much more to it. And I was like, I have to reveal this in the circles, because the way the church handled it is because he told them it was mutual, and he told them I wanted it. So then I needed to apologize because I wanted it. So I apologized to the church, and the youth girls left me. I had Yeah, they wouldn't talk to me.
Same. The church made you apologize.
Yes, because my ex had said it was mutual. So they didn't have the understanding that it was abuse. So I could understand why. Like, I felt like I should apologize too. before I realized it was actually abuse. And it was after, like, I had cleansed my mind and gotten therapy of, like, no, that was control, and it turned into abuse, and it wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
So I apologized, and it just got so awkward there. But he was perfectly fine. Like, he still attends that church to this day. Mm-hmm. They didn't excommunicate him. They didn't make him leave. And it just lit a fire under me. And I'm like, I cannot let this happen more to other girls. And, like, the fact that his family is still in good standing of sorts there, from what I've heard, they still have him teaching Sunday school. And I'm like, for so long, I just wanted to go to one of their meetings and be like, hey, it wasn't mutual. But they don't know it wasn't mutual. They still think it was. And I just want to go be like, it wasn't mutual. But it was also a can of worms I didn't want to open.
Yeah,
but
like, now you don't need to put yourself through that, you know?
Yeah, but now I'm at the point where I'm like, y'all, I'm reporting him. It's wrong. Because I would tell everyone else to report, and now I'm not reporting. So I'm like, no, I'm reporting him. You know, my little baby, yes, it would have been his child, but I would have a little two-year-old right now. Like,
yes.
But instead, every time I'm around little babies that are like two or...
Yeah.
Even now, like, I'm around babies or like someone loses a baby, I'm like, I feel you, but I can't explain. Because like, me and my husband didn't have a miscarriage. It was me and my ex. Yeah. So it's like one of those things where it's like, the passion inside of me because of my ex is just like, yes, because of my family, but the physical and emotional abuse in these conservative cultures breaks my heart, because we're supposed to be a family of God. And instead, they're saying that the wives are a doormat. And I'm sorry, but Living Hope in wherever it is in Lancaster is literally cultivating abusers because of the way they're speaking and the way they're handing it.
Pulling them. They wanted you to apologize to him.
That wasn't the church. Yeah, that wasn't the same church as Living Hope. Living Hope enabled my dad. But the church that happened at, they're not an enabling church. But they don't know, because I never told them it was actually rape. So it's a little complicated. But these churches that he would have gone to in the past enabled it. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It's so wrong.
Yeah. And like, you might not have told them everything, but also, like, did they ask for your side?
They didn't. I did have a meeting, though, with a pastor, and I explained it. And he said, I know it's abuse. But I told him I didn't want to take it to the church.
Okay.
Because once I take it to the church, it's still the church my mom goes to. And my little sister got all her friends taken by his little sister.
Wow.
So it's kind of me not taking it to the church is me, not that I'm not standing up for myself, it's that I'm trying to protect my little sister.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she had all her friends taken, and it was horrible. People wouldn't talk to her, all because his little sister. And like, we became the black sheep of the family, or the church.
Yeah.
So now she's finally having her friends back, and so it's at a time where I'm like, the pastor knows what's right. The pastor knows this.
Right.
That's okay. Like, it was kind of a compromise I had to come to.
Okay. Yeah.
But then my reporting is going to be to protect other girls in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
That way, if something happens and they report it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not like it's something that you have to report to a church. Like, you know, you can tell the police about it, but it's not something that, like, a church has to know about. But, yeah.
And I don't go there anymore. But if he does start dating, I will speak up. Although, I, like, blocked all his family on my socials because they were just stalking me. And I don't need a stalker. Like, I don't need them trying to pull me down and spreading rumors. Like, I'm a child of God, and there's protections around me that they don't have.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That is...
They're children. Yeah. They're children of God, too. But I'm saying that... Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where my passion came from. That's where I'm like, this has to end. This is where people like Mel Esch, he's not going to get off the hook. People like my dad, people need to know. Like, the youth girls at his church, they know, because I told them that he's not a good guy. They stay away from him.
Yeah.
But the church is enabling it, so he still goes there.
Right.
So it's like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm not going to say names. No, I will, because they're not good men.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta... People need to be warned, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, these guys can't be allowed to just do what they do so freely with no consequences.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm really, yeah, it's horrible. Like, absolutely horrific that all of that happened to you. Oh, I'm so sorry. My brain can't even fathom the amount of pain that must have caused you. But it's so beautiful that you're willing to want something good to come out of it. And you're willing to, like, use your story to share it with other people and to warn other girls about him. Like,
yeah,
that part is just so beautiful. Like, just your heart.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. Go for it.
Oh, I just said that. Like, that takes a lot of strength.
Thank you. See, insane. But I wouldn't have fallen for it if the church would have taught, like, growing up, oh, Living yeah. Hope. If Living Hope wouldn't have enabled my dad, I would have been able to see it in Samuel before I fell for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So absolutely. In a sense, it is the church's fault that he abused me, even though I still didn't go to that church, or I didn't go to that church at the time.
Yeah, and I feel like when girls have really abusive dads and that abuse is enabled, then it becomes a thing of, well, my dad is doing all this to me and, like, saying that he loves me, so this is what love looks like. So then when you get that same treatment from, like, a boyfriend later in life, it's like, this is what love is,
mm-hmm.
You know?
And I, like, told Samuel I would not kiss before we were engaged. So he proposed. He proposed and then immediately stuck his tongue down my throat, which that sounds really harsh, but like I said, I say facts. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, I was insane. Like, oh my word. And then basically having sex, like, he manipulated me so bad that he, word for word, this is what he said. It's ingrained into my memory because, yeah, just like you said, he said, if you love me, you would do this. And anyways, we're getting married, so what does it matter?
Wow. Yeah, that's insanely manipulative.
And I was just like, okay, because, you know, my dad said he loved me, and yet he would pat my butt at 13 and give me a kiss on the cheek.
Oh, wow.
You know, he loved me, so I guess this is how love is shown. And I was like,
yeah.
And he said, you know, my ex would say, this is a relationship from God. You're such a gift from God to me. So then I was like,
no. Yeah, oh, like, so brain can further manipulate you.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this is God. And I was like, I guess this is the what God wants me to have.
Wow.
Like, I just like, I guess this is the relationship, and we had sex already, so I guess I'm stuck with him. I'm not stuck with him.
Thank goodness you got out.
And he's not gonna, oh my goodness, it would have been horrible.
Right?
It would have been such a bad marriage. I would have possibly left if I would have come to my mind.
Right. But let's just be glad that it never reached that point where you got married. Thank goodness you left.
Yes, like, God is so good. Yes. And Sheldon was there for me. Like, I would cry, and I didn't have any other guy to, like, ask questions to after I broke up, because I was like, I wanted to know things, but you sometimes just need to hear things from a guy's perspective.
Right.
And so it was just like, God was like, here, ask Sheldon. I don't know why I did, actually, but I would ask him all kinds of questions, and, like, he would send me, like, long messages in return answering all my questions, and it was just like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. God had him there at just the right time. I didn't think I was gonna end up marrying him. He was just a guy friend.
Yeah, right.
Got a guy friend. Guy friend I had to block with my ex.
Right. My goodness.
Just
why do you think, well, I guess you already answered that question a little bit, but, like, why do you think this sexual abuse is so prevalent in these circles, and, like, how do you think we can get it to be less prevalent?
Oh my goodness. Okay, this is my passion. So I think it's so prevalent because the purity culture has taken such an extreme to protect men. So my aunt, I love her, she's literally the best thing ever. They washed all the laundry together and they threw it on the couch. And we would go to their house, and, like, sometimes the guys would, like, flop over the bed or, like, over the pile and fall asleep, right? They would wake up, and sometimes they would come out with a bra on their hand. It wasn't awkward. It was normal because that's a piece of laundry.
Right.
And it was just so normalized that it created such a healthy understanding. It's underclothes.
Right.
Period. I love that. I want to create that. But what I see in the Mennonite culture, and in other cultures too, some of them, there's such a strong purity culture that you don't talk about your period. You don't talk about underclothes. You don't speak about a bra. You don't speak about your cramps, because it's so taboo that it's sexualized. There's some churches you can't have wheelies, like double wheeled trucks, because the bump outs look like women's hip. And you have to...
I've heard this rumor that there's churches like that, and I've always wanted to know if it's actually true.
Is that real?
It is. It is true.
Real.
Yes.
Oh,
and they say you need to cover your elbows because they look like boobs.
I've also heard this one. This is real?
Yes.
What the damn hell?
How does that look like a boob? Let's talk about it.
Oh my gosh.
Wait.
Oh my goodness. Like,
I'm not getting it. Babe.
I've always wondered if this was like actually existed.
It is a thing. And it's because the men that created these rules were so perverted.
Right.
Like the whole thing of needing to have your ankles covered, like they're not a turn on. And in the culture, it's
keep going.
I get a whiff of my ankles and I'm going crazy. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Them feet be like, what? No, it's such a sexualized culture that we are breeding men to be perverts, because everything is so taboo that when they do hit of age and they happen to see some ankles or some elbows or a bra, like, it's just like they can't handle themselves and it's a meat turn on for them, but they don't understand what's happening when they get turned on because they're never taught because it's so taboo. So then they get turned on and they're like, oh, what is this feeling? And they see their sister, and they're like, they might happen to see her in PJs, which are not wrong. Not wrong at all, but I'm just giving some scenarios of stories I've heard.
Yeah.
They see her in PJs, and because she always wears these big, loose-fitting things, they see just a bare silhouette of her shape, which is not wrong. You may show your shape. There's nothing wrong with the shape of your body. Girls, embrace it. We are taught to hate it. We need to love the shape of our bodies, because the more we hate on it, the more mentally unokay we become. And we hate ourselves for our curves. But no.
Right.
So if he happens to see her curves and he decides to act on his feelings, which is disgusting that he would have feelings towards his sister, that's where, like, it's so taboo. That's abuse is happening in the homes because they're wanting to experiment because they don't know.
Exactly.
They don't know. And there's ages.
You know?
They're just curious. And yes, it's not okay that they're like this and that they do it to their sisters, that they do it to their girlfriends, that they abuse people. But because it's so taboo and we don't talk about it, they don't understand themselves.
Right.
And that's why
they
don't
understand how to, like, they don't understand what self-control is, because that's exactly not taught. Instead of preaching, like, self-control, they're just preaching about how women need to cover up more. That way you don't even have to have the opportunity to use self-control.
Yeah. And like Ben said in one of your other podcasts, you know, if the women are completely covered up, then if there's a woman that isn't completely covered up, then it's not the guy's problem because she's dressed immodest.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm like, that couldn't be farther from the truth, because a level lays on us. We can carry ourselves in a very whatever way, but that isn't our fault if we get raped because we carry ourselves that way. Like, how do I say it? Like,
in no situation.
Nothing. Like, we can put ourselves on men, and that is wrong, but I don't know, I'm stumbling over words because everything wants to come out, but, like,
yeah, I know for a man, just keep talking.
Yeah, for a man to rape a woman, there is no reason that is okay. Like, nothing gives me okay. It doesn't matter if she's wearing, what?
So there is never, like, any situation. I don't care how I'm walking, how I'm talking, how I talk to you, how I dress, I don't care. If I say no to you, there's never a situation where you need to, like, put...
Never.
It's never okay for a guy to think he has the right to tell a woman to dress this way or to wear this clothes. It needs to come from us.
Yeah, it's a personal decision. We're not over here telling them what to wear.
But, yeah, I kind of agree.
With what?
Yeah, I don't think a man should tell me how to dress. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's, like, a level of respect. Because, like, if I wore something that he didn't like, and then he told me, like, I would probably change. Not because I think that he has that, like, he has that control over me, but because I respect him.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a difference between him, like, expressing an opinion and being that's like, true. Hey, I don't love this. Like, that's one thing that's completely fine. But for them to be like, you absolutely cannot wear that.
Yeah, you're right.
And, like, telling you what to do. Like,
hell. I'm telling you what to wear because my ex was like, I want you to wear this particular outfit so that, like, I can have sex with you in it.
Oh, that's crazy.
And, like, that's where I'm like, stomach. No. And now me and my husband, like, if he doesn't like a certain, like, way something fits me, we talk about it.
Right.
It's a respect, like Lizzie was saying, there's a level of respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
There, that is beautiful. And he never is just like, don't wear that. Because, like, I'd immediately be like, excuse me?
You want to take this off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, agreed. That's where I'm like, the culture is a breeding ground. That is where it's happening.
Yeah.
It's being preached over the pulpit. And guys are given, like, the leader of the household. They're basically being told that they're allowed to run over the women. Instead of respecting like women and caring. Women are being told to be doormats. Yeah. Like, my brother, bless his little heart, we had this joke with PMSing. He called it the Pokey Monkey Syndrome. And whenever I didn't feel good, he goes, do you have the Pokey Monkey Syndrome? And sometimes I'd be like, yes. He's like, okay, I got you. He'd wrap me in a blanket. He'd get me a cup of tea, and he'd bring me a bar of chocolate. We weren't allowed. Like, that was taboo by my dad, but, like, he still did it. And it was, it was so sweet. Like, he cared for me. And
that's so sweet.
It was just, like, so sweet. But I don't see that in other families. Because if you're not allowed to talk about your period, then, like, there'd never be a Pokey Monkey Syndrome.
Right.
You know? And that's where guys don't understand girls' moods. Because they're not taught that sometimes our moods are all over the place. Because we can't control them.
I mean, we genuinely can't.
Really, no. Like, really can't.
Like, I would love to be happy sometimes. But I'm, like, I'm close to tears.
Yes.
For no reason.
It happens.
Just like exactly. The sadness. It's just like
the sadness is real.
Yeah.
Yes.
I figured all this out. I was so sad these last 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
Yes. I'm glad it's over, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I guess we can start wrapping up a little bit, but like, what would you say to somebody who's grown up in these Anabaptist circles who has been sexually abused? Like, what kind of advice would you give them?
First off, I would say go to, like, you don't have to go in person to therapy, but find a certified therapist who knows how the brain and the body and the emotions work together. And start there. And and start reading yourself affirmations, which sounds like crazy, but you got to start building up your self-esteem to be able to start healing that area. Yes. So, like, 100%. And also find people that understand you and cut out those that tell you you're lying.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If it takes you, sometimes you might need to actually move out of your home community, but find yourself the help you need and surround yourself in people that enable growth and enable healing. Yeah. And that aren't going to down you. And also people that you can just cry to and people you can rant to that don't think what you're saying is like that you're dissing people.
Yeah.
Because the amount of times I said, Mom, I'm ranting, and would just go off about my ex because he hurt me so bad I needed to let my steam off.
Right.
And and then I would just break into tears, and it was so healing because you really actually do need to verbalize what happened to you and speak it out. And then you also need to cover it in God's prayer, like in God's hand, and pray over it, pray protection over it. Because you need to be like, remove the power that your abuser had on you.
Yep.
Like,
I love
that. Is like one of the first things you need to remove the power. And removing the power is verbalizing what happened and verbalizing the facts. Sometimes let the emotions take over and rant, cry, go outside and scream. I've had counselors be like, go outside, there's woods, scream. And just allow yourself to break down. Because that pain gets so bottled up in you that you just cannot handle it anymore. And also, if you're dealing with self-harm, go to someone who knows self-harm and can appropriately handle it. And if you really can't find anyone, just take a rubber band and snap yourself. Because a therapist told me that because they said, you're feeling the pain, but you're not actually harming yourself. So it relieves some of that pain inside. Because some of the abuse that you face might think that you're not good, so you just need to hurt yourself. You just need to get the pain out.
Yeah.
And sometimes in that moment, you have to get the pain out. And for me, like, I self-harmed. And I'm like, I don't love telling people to hurt themselves with a rubber band, but that is so much better than hurting yourself in other ways.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, it's better than using a knife, you know?
Exactly. And go find the help you need. Yes. You know, it might need you to ask someone because you can't mentally do it because of the abuse, but go up to someone and say, look, I need help. I need to put myself in a place of healing. I know I've heard about Hannah's house is really good. Like, have someone do the research for you and find a reputable place. It does not have to be conservative by any means. And if they're pushing the Bible down your throat and telling you to go have time to pray and read your Bible for healing, stay clear. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, you need more than that. Yes. That is not going to give you the answer because it doesn't help your mental pathways. If you know about mental pathways, they're like little grooves in your brain that abuse will create. So that's what I would say. You really need to find someone to find you help. If it's like really, really bad that you just want to immerse yourself in complete surrounding yourself with like people that are healing you and like go to a home that helps you work through it, find someone to search deeply into the home before you just sign yourself up.
Yeah, maybe do a little in-person interview, get the vibes first.
Exactly, because how many of my friends went to Aquila Villa and girls, no.
Right?
Like, really my heart breaks. They had to go for more counseling after that for more healing because it was so wrong.
Right, yeah, that's really sad.
So those are
thanks for sharing.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you for sharing so much great advice and just like sharing so much of your heart, Hannah. I loved it always. So much.
I'm glad. Thank you for having me. I got so excited when you asked me. I was like, God, this is your timing. This is, you know, a great way for me to like stop hiding some of the abuse that happened to me because I was scared. And it's like, it was perfect timing from
God. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm really excited for this episode.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be able to do another one with you sometime.
Yes.
It feels like you have a lot more to say, you know?
Yeah. I will share. I have an open book with my story because that's how healing comes to other people. And it heals me to talk about it.
Yeah. I'm so glad. Well, we will close out. We always pray for the people before we leave. Do you want to say a little prayer before we sign off?
Sure. For sure. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the gift of Judy and Lizzie and just the encouragement that they are trying to share to girls and guys alike, Lord. I just pray that you would empower their ministry, help them to just know who to care for and where to go next. And Lord, I just pray for the listeners, if they are struggling, Father, if they don't know where to go, I just pray that you would open up the pathways that they could reach out to people that need them, that they'd be able to find the help that they need. And Lord, if they're not struggling, I pray that you would help them learn how to help people that are struggling and not knowing where to go, Lord, that you would empower people to help heal other people and to bring them closer to you, Lord. Thank you so much for the connection being able to work out and helping this all to work out, even though it seemed like it may not have. And Lord, I just pray a blessing over us and over all the listeners in your name.
Amen. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Yes. Thank you for letting me.
I'm so honored that you like shared your story with us. I can't even tell you.
I'm literally so honored that you asked me to.
And I'm glad we did.
Yeah.